Welcome to the to today's healthcare call. Our topic this morning is, or this afternoon, depending on where you are, the topic is inviting, engaging, performing in a complex and changing world. Our guests this morning are Jill Perkins and Michael Herman. Jill Perkins, PhD, studied math and high-energy particle physics at the University of Texas, Arlington. She completed her doctoral work at Fermilab outside of Chicago. She joined Towers Watson in 2004 and leads their American consulting team for organizational surveys and insights. She leads global employee and culture research engagements for a diverse set of clients dealing with complex challenges and related to engaging and retaining talent and cultural transformation or integration following mergers and acquisitions. And speaking of mergers and acquisitions and changes in the world, since we wrote this bio, Towers Watson is now Willis Towers Watson after a merger with another company. With 20 years of experience in quantitative research and analysis, Jill understands organizational complexity, the need for simple and smart solutions, and how to turn data into meaningful action. And that's the piece that I'm really waiting to hear about. Michael Herman, MBA, studied economics at Indiana University, then finance and healthcare administration at the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business, now the Booth School of Business. Since 91, he's worked as Michael Herman Associates Principal Consultant, designer, facilitator, teacher, and coach, serving leaders, associates, and other facilitators in teams and much larger groups at every level of the organization. He's an internationally recognized leader in the practice of open space technology and inviting organization. And I've known Michael for a long time since we were both just learning about open space technology. He's recently been making connections between open space and agile software development and other ways of inviting and involving everyone in shaping the work of the organization. And he also has a new contract since the bios were written. So he might talk a little bit about that work on this call. Michael and Jill met in 2004. Decided to move to London together on their first date, and married back in Chicago in 2006. Michael works with Towers Watson as an independent contractor specializing in post-survey action and involvement. They live in a classic Chicago bungalow they rebuilt, doing much of the work themselves. So, Jill, I'd like to hand the mic to you and have you start out by telling us a little about your work, just to give us some background, and then Michael, I'd like you to chime in and do the same.
Okay, thanks, Joelle, and hi everyone. Thank you for having us.
Go ahead.
Thank you for having us join you today. So as Joelle mentioned, I work for Willis Towers Watson. I've been with the company for about 12 years, and I specialize in measuring employee opinion through typically, you know, large-scale surveys, but also some more qualitative type methods as well. Obviously, I wasn't trained in this area, but fell in love with the process of collecting employee opinion as a way to help drive change in organization, and decided to spend my life's work in this area. And we'll get into this in more detail, but specifically what I'm kind of currently helping organizations think through is the evolution of engagement and also the measurement practices around understanding levels of engagement in the organization. There's a, obviously a lot of change in every industry. There's also a lot of change just globally occurring, and this is having some real measurable impacts on the way we go about working together and how we can measure opinion to understand that better. So I think, we can talk more as we get into it about some of the changes that I'm seeing, but just to give a little context on my background and currently what I'm helping organizations think through. Michael?
Hi, everybody. I started out, as Joelle mentioned, in a business, an MBA sort of program that led me into planning for hospital projects, medical office buildings, surgery centers, imaging centers, and doing that planning work. And then I went to, after a couple of years, I went to the far opposite end of the spectrum, what seemed like to me the opposite end, and led courses for Outward Bound in the city first, and then in the wilderness, and then corporate team building programs. And I followed that thread of facilitation that I did with Outward Bound through a number of methods and frameworks and approaches, and stumbled into open space and recognized it as a way to do what I had been doing with groups of 12 in terms of briefing a challenge that might take them 20 minutes with some toys that we had stacked up in the park. I could do the same thing, but with open space, I could give 300 people the challenge over the next several hours or several days of figuring out the future of education in Peoria or the future of food security in Illinois or something like that, some large strategic or community project. And the shape of it was the same. And so I saw open space as allowing me to invite people into organization building or community building. And I followed that thread, and more and more people called me for really two things, because they wanted to do open space and they were going to do open space, or they wanted to do open space but they were sure they couldn't do open space the way it was written in the book, and we needed to talk about some way to understand what bits of it they could do within the frameworks that they were working in to make things as open and as inviting as they could be within the constraints they were given. So following along that for a while, eventually it has led me into the agile software development arena. And what I find working in that space is that I'm doing, on the one hand, Scrum, Agile, the framework called Scrum, looks to me just like open space. And because we do these two-week sprints, that looks just like a team-building activity where we do the two-week sprint and then we do a couple hours of retrospective and debriefing. So the structure looks very much like the original team building work I did. So the neat thing that's happened in the last year is that we've started to take the liberating structures, the open space, the agile frames, and mix them together with what Jill's been doing with measurement. And so that's something that we've both been interested in putting together over the last year or so.
Yeah, and if I can build on that, this is, I think we recognize the connections in our work back when we met, but most recently I've seen a real need and application, a valuable application of this type of work that Michael does in the realm of employee measurement and engagement. I see these kinds of open and inviting processes, these very, very agile, adaptive, and processes that are focused on learning to be missing in a lot of organizations. And to me, I think that seems to be the key in terms of how we really, you know, move the needle on engagement and take us into the next phase of the journey that we're heading into. You know, what I'm seeing across the whole, working with a lot of organizations, obviously the world is changing. There's so much change and complexity. You know, healthcare industry, as an example, is in the U.S. is completely transforming itself, and nobody's immune to change right now. And that puts a lot of stress on organizations. And many of the tried and true processes in the organization, and that includes the way we deal with understanding the employee experience and what we do about it, just are tapping out. They're just not working anymore. They're ineffective for the new conditions. And through some, new work with organizations, Michael and I have started to combine some of our thinking to bring some of these new approaches into play. Once you've measured employee opinion, how do you actually drive meaningful change in an organization? And how do you learn from what you're doing? And how do you transform the act of measurement from being an event, being very event-driven, and then quickly losing steam, to engagement being more about the culture and how we work together? And measurement then is just a check-in to make sure that we're doing what we need to do. And learn, you know, a moment to an opportunity to learn places where we can continuously improve. So I think as organizations, and I hear this across every single industry right now, organizations are saying we need to be more agile. We need to be able to adapt to the changes quickly. We need to have our teams, you know, ready and able to do that. And there's a real desire, but still I think a lot of exploration around how do you do that in a good way, in an effective way. There are definitely organizations exploring how to apply these agile philosophies to the enterprise, and that might be, you know, one way that people start to get into this avenue. But I think from a from the employee experience side, it really just as simple as helping people feel that they can contribute through the way, you know, managers support involvement, invite involvement, and really create kind of this cohesive feeling that we're all in it together, and it's not just employees needing to, you know, line up to certain directives and you know, get their work done, that really they're co-creating the success of the organization. Michael, I don't know if you would add anything to that. Oh, go ahead, Joel.
I'd like to invite you to continue the conversation between you and Michael. And I'd also like to invite our callers to raise your hand at any point if you have a comment or question that you'd like to add into the conversation. So you raise your hand by pressing 3 on your keypad, and then we'll open your line so that your voice can be heard. So, Jill and Michael, go ahead, and all of you think about what you'd like to ask them.
I would add what you said, Jill, about something about engaging everyone. The thing that I think the potential, when I mean from the beginning, When I first looked at what you were doing with the survey work, the thing that struck me is that you've already got this license to talk to everybody. Okay, you get to talk through a printed or a digital survey. You don't get to have a conversation, but you have a chance to touch everybody in the organization if they respond. So they have that choice. You give people that choice whether to or not to engage, whether or not to fill in the survey, and then you give them a chance to say something, even in a very structured way, in a, you know, thousands of people at once sort of way. you give people a chance to be heard or counted or something, counted in a good way, to have their marks count toward the total. And then when I look at what is written up and what the liberating structures stuff says in terms of unleashing everyone, involving everyone in deciding what comes next, the big potential with the survey is you're already touching everybody. We haven't, running around as an independent facilitator consultant, I don't get a chance to touch everybody in the organization. I get to talk to everybody in the room, and we can, you know, try to have more and more people in the room. But the chance to introduce to everybody some framework, some language, some set of ideas, ways of thinking about what's happening in the organization, in the culture, in the, you know, how we're working, what kind of a space we're creating together. That just, to me, right from the beginning, looked hugely ripe. And we have come up with what we now just talk about as Michael's two favorite questions, because, you know, I proposed early on that you could ask all those things and give all that language to people in terms of how to talk about what's happening in the organization. But I always thought you needed to follow it with two even more important questions. The first one being, would you like to meet with people in your immediate area? Yes or no? You know, would you like to meet with people in your immediate area to talk about the issues raised in this survey and what can be done to make a positive difference with existing resources? So it's all nicely bounded. You don't get to meet with people, you know, all over the world, or, you know, you get to meet with people in your area. Now, if that's a conference call with people around the world, because those are the people you usually work with, that's fine. But you stay within your local work area, however that's defined. You stay within existing resources, discretionary resources. You don't make a wish list and go hold somebody accountable for giving you the world. You work where you are with what you have to make a difference on these issues that are named. And then the second question is also yes, no, very simple. If we gave you a kit, some kind of support, some kind of guide, would you be willing to convene such a conversation, have the conversation, and then come back and tell us something about what happened? And so this always looked to me like opening space in the whole organization, making the survey itself the invitation, and then leveraging the language it offers into conversations about those topics that were validated and legitimized by the provision of the kit and the guide and the asking for the results. So this, I proposed, what, about 10 or 12 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah.
And last
year?
There's
potential. Well, and there's huge potential in this idea, right, that that I think many of us in this field would say that, you know, the measurement can be important, but most important is the conversation it sparks, right? And although we get requested and have to deliver things like manager training to help them really understand their data and what it's saying and getting into all that detail, what we want to do and try to do is also say, but hey, guys, it's about going and talking to people. It's about having visible leadership and engaging and involving folks. And it's not something you can do to people. You have to only, you can help shape the culture, and you can create an inviting and engaging work environment, but ultimately it's that individual's choice. So helping, to change that mindset a little bit. But that potential and that idea is fantastic. And just to let everybody know on the call, we have yet to deliver that to an organization, although I do feel things are shifting. My perspective on that is that many years ago, maybe it felt like a loss of control of the process, or, again, kind of back to this old mindset that managers and leaders were responsible for engagement and they had to come up with some kind of plan to then execute. They were the ones that owned it, right? That was just too big of a step for people to think about doing and kind of operationalize across a large organization. But that mentality is shifting, and we're starting to do, although we haven't done that, we're starting to do other things. Like we're helping organizations understand that what they really want to do when thinking about their engagement plans, their action plans, is to do their ordinary work, all the work they need to do to drive the business, in engaging ways. That engagement action planning often is not about having a separate plan that is all about action on engagement. But what really needs to happen is just to do that ordinary work, to take what you're learning from the survey and bake that into annual operating plans, for example, to look at how the team is working and fix those opportunities for improvement. So really subtly shifting the language. I was working with a financial services organization that really created this philosophy called Engage 365, because they had been doing surveys for so long that everybody thought the engagement meant a survey, right? It was this event that happened on an annual basis. And then before the event, they would have pizza parties, and after the event, they would have pizza parties, and everything looked really great because they would throw pizza parties before the survey. But it had nothing to do with the real state of engagement and what people were really struggling with in the work environment. So they still survey. They still see that as a critical check-in, but they are in the process, this is a multi-year journey, they're 2 years into it now, of reshaping the mindset with everybody. And so with managers, they started to help managers understand where are all the connection points. What can they do when they're doing all this ordinary work that would be a little bit more engaging, just to try to raise awareness and generate some new ideas for that. On the employee side, they opted in for a thing that we provide, which is an individual engagement report. So individual participants taking the survey can opt in to get a report just for them on their level of engagement with some action ideas that they can take to be responsible for that. So they really started to, kind of reshape the conversation that engagement is how we work. We want to have an engaging culture. Everybody has a choice and everybody has a responsibility in helping create that work environment. So we didn't do the two questions, but I think this is a really great example of kind of shifting that language. Another organization, very simple thing that they did with their survey, they wanted to acknowledge employees who were having a measurable impact on engagement, not leaders, but anybody in the organization. And so at the end of their survey, there was a place where people could write in votes for people that they thought were really inspiring and engaging, and specifically what they did, so they could tell the story. And they, collated all of that and then highlighted the engaging coworkers that people voted on. So there's some really interesting things just from a measurement perspective that are starting to take place.
These are really great ideas, and I see that Lisa would like to join in the conversation. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, all. Hi, it's a great topic for a conversation. I had a couple of things I wanted to add. One was I'm just reading Gloria Steinem's new book, which is wonderful, My Life on the Road. And she talks a lot about talking circles, which and the power of them, and also the great historic and cross-cultural source of them, which is very much, I think, along the lines of Michael's idea of what might happen in an organization if you kind of set loose anybody to gather a group together and have a conversation about something that's important to them, because that, as we know, is how anything gets done. The other thing that I wanted to say was one of the insights that I had in doing the liberating structures work is a shift in the role of the consultant or helper or however you like to characterize a role of working with an organization to help them on these kinds of things, In the old model, and certainly in my early days, it was kind of a model where we would go into an organization and talk to a lot of people, whether it was direct or through a survey or some other way, so that we ended up being really smart at a deep level about what people were thinking and feeling and what was going on. And a big aha I had at some point is that it really isn't all that useful for me to have that understanding. That understanding really has to reside inside the organization at all levels. And I think one of the powers of processes like Open Space is that they reorganize the structure so that it's not the core team or the consultant or the leadership or some particular group that ends up with that deep learning experience. It's everybody who participated.
That's a really great comment. Michael, it reminds me of the work that we did with a healthcare organization to embed some liberating structures in some of the training that we did. So maybe I'll share that story, and then Lisa, if that sparks another thought, please comment. But I think what we are doing in a way is a bit sneaky, because when you run a survey, to some degree it gives you a bit of license to do things post-survey that you might not otherwise get a chance to do with organizations, at least I have found, especially these days when organizations maybe have been surveying for a while and they feel like they haven't been as effective as they want to be on the action planning process. So they're interested in trying some new things. So I had a healthcare client in the last 6 months who decided that in order to really kind of change the way that they worked with employee survey data, they wanted to bring all of their managers and leaders together for a leadership summit. And this was about 900 people over the course of several days. And they asked me and my team to come present. And this is one of the ways I can tell kind of the maturity of an organization in terms of how they talk about it on this engagement journey, because they wanted to hear about best practices, industry trends, and basically asked us to talk at them and then proceeded to give us about 3 hours on the agenda. So I refused to do that. Of course, I said, yes, that'd be great, and then kind of refused to just present data for that period of time, and it seemed like such an opportunity. We have all these managers at all levels. This is all the way down to, you know, anybody who's managing a team in this organization. Why don't we equip them with some things that they can learn in the room, but also take those practices back to their teams and continue the conversation? So I worked with Michael to pick out a repertoire of some liberating structures. And, you know, in between sharing the best practice and going through the data, which is what they wanted, we gave them four different liberating structures to play with through the morning. And they had a great time, of course, you know they would. But we gave them then a card with all of these kind of described and highly encouraged them to go back to their teams. We've had one check-in since, and seems that people are, you know, using what we were teaching them. We don't have a lot of stories yet, but we'll be watching that closely. And it's just maybe one example of, to your point, Lisa, that, you know, the measurement may still be important, but how does the organization then internalize that, learn from it, have the right conversation so that they're really owning that, and my role becomes just one of facilitating that process, right?
I think the thing, as I'm understanding my current situation, just a couple weeks old, my third week in a new situation that is slated to run for some time here. So I'm taking what I've learned about practice as an independent, been mostly independent for 25 years, but every now and then I dive in and I get deep into the weeds at some place, so I have that inside experience. And as I'm coming back into that, I find that what I'm mostly doing is I really want to know what's happening now. And I see that as analogous to, in my local situation, analogous to what why folks run surveys. They want to know what's happening out there in a larger field, but the question is the same. What's happening now? And what I notice is that what I want to do with that information, why I want to know what's happening now, is I want to be able to ask better questions. And that goes to what you were saying, Lisa, about you end up gathering all this knowledge or information about what's going on. And that, to me, it's not what am I going to do with it or what am I going to say, as much as what does that let me ask next. I think that's where the invitation, you know, where some of the invitation can come. And that's what Jill did with this, you know, hundreds of managers in the room and floating these structures. She basically was showing them different ways to ask questions about the data set. And that's what the toolkits we've done is showing people different ways to ask questions and invite people into the conversations for the, you know, based on the survey data.
This is Lisa again. I think that I love that story about embedding the processes into the report. And I think why, you know, that's so important is that we just know that hearing about other people's experience is not the same as hearing the story from them about their experience in their tone of voice, in their, you know, their soul revealed kind of thing. That has an impact on people and people's behavior, that learning that 8 out of 10 people feel that things aren't very engaging around here just doesn't have the same power as hearing somebody at a meeting. One experience I had that really moved me was when one of the cleaners at a hospital I was working with at a gathering that included not just the managers, but cleaners and doctors and patients. It was very diverse. And she said, I didn't know I was someone who could speak in a group like this before, but now I realize that I have things to say and I can speak, and I'm looking forward to more opportunities to do so. Well, that just blew everybody's mind. But my telling someone about that isn't the same as their being in the room and hearing her quavering voice and experiencing that experience of hers. And so I've been kind of more committed than ever to diverse face-to-face gatherings as being a critical part of the formula for making actual behavioral change.
Right, that's great. I mean, in many ways, we're still struggling with the challenges that organizations and people and managers have been struggling with for ages, which is this behavioral change. And, you know, we're still dealing with humans, so that, you know, in some ways we're still, as much as the science of employee opinion measurement has progressed, it ultimately still comes down to that. I mean, how great are our relationships, and do we have the emotional intelligence to deal with people effectively and support them in the work that they're doing, all of that. And it reminds me of a couple things that I think organizations are not doing, or things that they're doing that are not helping the cause still, just kind of getting back to this old mindset. And the first one is kind of an old mindset thing. The second one is a new trend that's emerging that I'm still weighing the options of, and I'm not sure it's helpful. But Lisa, just kind of continuing on this thread, the new thing that's emerging is that with people having so much access to data and information all the time, there's now a push to do more frequent surveying. And in a way, that could be positive, because we may be moving away from the event-driven, once a year, every 2 years kind of thing, to an ongoing, quote, conversation. But the question is it really a conversation or is it just more data? And I don't quite trust organizations' ability to really effectively work with more data through this more frequent pulsing that people are talking about. So my jury's still out on how to make that an effective process. On the one hand, I think it could be really, really powerful if it is helping create this ongoing conversation in organizations, ongoing learning and refinement, kind of, you know, reflecting or having a retrospective in Scrum terms. But because I see what I see when I'm working with leaders and managers and organizations is just this hunger for the data and hiding, in a way, hiding behind the data to not have to go have the real conversations that you're talking about, Lisa. So I'm a bit concerned about that, but just I don't know if others have seen that trend. There's so many different survey tools now out there that, you know, will get you, you know, an idea of how people are feeling at any given point in time. And I think that's a bit risky without a really clear measurement strategy that absolutely includes what do you do with the data? How does it support the conversations you need to have and the learning you need to have? But the second thing I think that organizations are still doing that does not help the case, and I see this every day, is whenever we're not helping organizations with the communication of the results from a survey, the communications that go back out to the organization, it often astonishes me sometimes the language that's used. It seems very old school, and it seems that the communicators and the people writing this content are not really in touch with the employee perspective. And if I was an employee in an organization, I would maybe even be turned off by some of this. So, you know, not even just using jargon, but just thinking about, you know, whatever, you know, top leaders in the organization decide they want to focus on to help their organization improve, that has to get translated into employee terms and what that means to them in a way that would be inspiring and that they can connect with, right? And so I was reminded of this the other day. I saw this really amazingly beautiful infographic, this one-page document that went out to all employees. This is a global manufacturing organization. Results were pretty okay on the whole. And they, you know, spelled out the storyline, and at the bottom of the page, they said, here's what we're going to work on, and they picked three things. And, you know, they said things like, we're going to motivate people to go above and beyond. And I'm thinking, yeah, you might want to do that, but if I was an employee, I would be kind of ticked off. I'm like, wait, so what, you're going to, like, somehow change my mind about how much effort I'm putting in? You know, like, you need to do the work to translate that.
Keep a lookout for the guy coming around with the stick, the motivator.
Yeah. Another example was, I've got this in front of me, we're going to speak to the heads and the hearts. And I'm thinking, you might want to do that, but what is it? I mean, think about the people reading that, right? Like, they're going to want to see evidence of that. So just go do it. In fact, take this communication that you've put together and, you know, think about how to produce that outcome and change the language. Because I read these things almost on a daily basis, and I'm just kind of shocked and wish they would ask for help.
We have a couple of others who'd like to join in the conversation. Mary Boone first.
Hi, everybody. And hi to you too, Lisa especially. I wanted to say that I'm really enjoying the conversation. Thanks so much for this. It's always great to converse with like minds. And one of the questions I had for Jill is, Jill, you briefly touched on the fact that there's so many new tools out there and so many new approaches and methods for collecting some of this data. And, you know, to Lisa's point about the power of narrative face-to-face, I'm just wondering what kinds of new tools you've seen in the qualitative data area and anything that's really been new or fresh for you that you see has particular promise in that regard.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things. And I think that the approaches, there's so many approaches and tools out there, you know, whether or not something's right for an organization probably really depends on that organization, the current culture, and what they're trying to shift. So a lot of these could be applied in different ways and get good outcome. So I think it's just being really clear of, you know, what it is that you're trying to create, what your primary objectives are. And one of the things I've seen most effective was a really simple idea. Most organizations have their own intranets, and usually these technologies support dialogue in some way. They usually just don't have that turned on. More organizations are starting to turn on blogging, so their leaders might blog something, and then maybe you get a few comments, but it's not really geared up to support conversations. So, you know, one of the things that I've seen a few organizations do over the last couple of years is, and these were more specific to some big changes that were underway and kind of related to what they learned from the engagement survey, but the organization was also going through a lot of change, and they just wanted to get people's get people talking about what the changes meant. And they, you know, just posted a series of questions up on their intranet and invited everybody to respond. And it was just it was an online conversation. It's the kind of thing that happens out in the real world all the time, but less so, you know, inside of a corporation or a big organization. And so, you know, I think that was a meaningful thing for them to do. You know, it just helped employees feel that they really had a voice and were being heard and involved in the change process that they were going through. So that's a really simple technique that I think gets more at that qualitative side of things. There are some tools,
you know,
out,
Jill,
there that also – oh, go ahead. Yep.
It just occurred to me that we did a similar thing in your Chicago office with the all-associates meeting. A couple of years ago, where we did that kind of exchange and posted it all in the kitchen cabinets, in the break room, sort of, you know, kitchen spaces, in the office there.
Yeah, that's right. So we have in Chicago about 600 associates, and we're going through some organizational change and wanted to get people talking about it. And so used a very low-tech method, almost like the suggestion box, but instead of those going into a box and becoming invisible to people, we had kind of physical places where people could post their comments, see other comments being made, and post, you know, kind of continue the conversation. So, yeah, that's a great example of a physical example of that. The other thing, there are some tools and I will fail to remember some of the names of them, but that support what you might call a jam. Actually, Michael's been working with one called KikoChat that is similar, where you can get groups of people together in, you know, formal or informal ways to conference, you know, virtually across the organization around the world. So that, I think that kind of tool is emerging and will be important.
Meeting face to face. Kiko does video conferencing, video chat spaces, meeting spaces, and any, whether it's on the screen or in meeting rooms, where people can be gathered face to face. In Agile, we co-locate teams, so they can be all cooking in the same room on the same issues and post stuff up on the walls again. Face-to-face, any of those face-to-face things really helps. Face-to-face really matters.
And the last thing I would add, which is maybe more of a traditional tool, but new nonetheless, there are tools to help kind of synthesize and understand comment data that you get back from a survey, which is this unstructured data is often very difficult for organizations and managers to use, and people often feel compelled to read every single comment, which can be quite helpful, but if you've got thousands of comments to read, that can be quite daunting. We have a tool, and there are others out there, that organize all of that data conceptually. So if you're looking through your survey data and you say, wow, a lot of people are talking about that they're facing obstacles every day to doing their work, you can go look at the comments to see what obstacles people are talking about. It kind of makes that linkage between the quantitative and the qualitative. Does that answer your question?
Is that a proprietary tool, or is that a tool that, is that a commercial tool?
Yeah, so the tool that we use is proprietary, and we use it with our with the clients that we do engagement survey work with. But I think there may be others. You know, that science is improving quite dramatically, quite rapidly. So there may be others on the
Yeah,
you know,
I think
there
may be other tools.
Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Marcia has her hand up.
Hi, this is Marcia Hughes-Reese, and I'm really enjoying the conversation. And it's right on target. I had to smile when Jill was talking about the data. And I think especially in healthcare, but in other organizations as well, there is such an emphasis on now the new term, of course, is big data. And so it's, you know, how do you wrap your arms around big data? But I think that what a lot of folks may be interpreting that as getting even more data versus how to turn that data into useful information. And when I've gone into healthcare organizations, especially up on the unit, I'm always a little bit taken back by, you know, how survey graphs themselves, I mean, like just bar graphs, are put up, and that is basically the feedback that is given to the folks that are working on the unit. And there really is no time provided for folks to sit down and have these type of conversations that you're talking about. I mean, these conversations where, you know, you can have simple questions like, well, what do you think this means, especially what does this mean here on our work unit? As someone was, you know, was just saying, Michael, I think it was, you know, it's not about, you know, what does it mean for the rest of the organization, but if we look at these returns, if we look at this data and what changes we could make up here, what does it mean for us? And so I think that, especially in healthcare, we are getting so infatuated with just gathering data, and especially given all the external regulatory demands, requirements for it, and data mining and big data, that we're forgetting the useful art and science of taking that data and moving it into useful useful information through conversation.
Excellent point. I completely agree.
I would add to something that that's follow on that. You know, when we convene meetings in open space, we survey the group. I mean, whether it's, you know, dozens or hundreds or even thousands. Sometimes we ask them two questions. What do you care about, and what are you willing to do about it? And offer them the possibility that the first thing they could do about it would be to write it down and put it on the wall and show up in the corner of the room and kick off a conversation. So are you willing to do that much about it? But it starts with, what do you care about? And then we don't take responsibility for doing anything about it other than pointing them to where they can do things about it. In a different sort of way, the way the Scrum development process, the framework operates, we have a 15-minute daily Scrum, a daily stand-up meeting, where all the different cross-functional members of the team get together, and the questions there are, what did you do yesterday, and what are you working on today? The third question, where applicable, when it's needed, is, what's getting in your way? Are there obstacles that we can help remove? But that kind of, you know, what did you do yesterday, and what are you doing today? That's a very simple couple of questions, but it means, you know, implies that you show up and you have to show up and report to your colleagues every day. And it reminds me that you know, things are changing, and all there's all this change in organizations. And underlying all of it is we're asking people to do, when we ask people to work in these new ways, process this more and more information, tell their stories, listen to stories, get the work done, we're asking people to do a lot more work. Now, sometimes there's chances to make it easier and to stop doing things. But overall, when we go in and we say, let's do Scrum or let's do Open Space even, Open Space looks easy, but we're asking people to move and change and grow and learn faster and faster, and it's a lot of work, and that's of course why invitation matters. And you don't want to take people, going back to my Outward Bound days, you don't want to take people off into the woods who don't want to be there. It starts raining and it's going to be all kinds of miserable. but it goes back, it starts with these, if we come back to these simple questions, that's the information, the data that really matters to me more and more.
Well, do we,
Marcia, I know that when I was working on the Plexus Positive Deviance work, the infection control in hospitals, one of the project requirements was that each hospital have some sort of meeting at least once a month, and sometimes they were more frequent than that, for all the teams to come together and talk about what they were working on and problems they were encountering and what they might do about them. And when I was working on a book about the project, I interviewed some of the team leaders at the hospitals, and one woman really moved me when she said, this project has given us something that we just never get in healthcare, and that is time to reflect on our professional practice. And that turned out to be hugely valuable. Then at the other extreme, there were lots of hospitals who had 5 or 10 minute stand-up meetings for the team to take the next step on their project that they were working on. So, like you say, there's such a need to take it back to the unit level and have people really work on it. But I'm learning along the way that there are a lot of formats that can make that possible. But you have to have some agreement from administration that this work needs some time blocked out.
It does, and I think that once, especially in healthcare, once folks begin to recognize that by providing that reflection time to really look at practices, both clinical as well as administrative, that what they're really trying to achieve, which are quality outcomes, that those will in turn follow, because you actually have the time to really sit back and participate in problem solving and solution finding. And I think that some of the more progressive hospitals are, they're using their huddles and even their exchange, their reports, handing shift reports, end of shift reports, to use some of those reflection opportunities. And in really in some of the great healthcare areas, they're doing it with the most important person in the hospital, and that is the patient, and involving the patient and the family in that type of reflection in terms of, because as you were talking about that, Michael, it kind of reminded me that wouldn't this be a great question to ask with the family and patient, how were things for you yesterday, and, how's it going for you today? and really involve it into a much more patient-centered type of conversation as well.
Well, and what you describe as quality or that experience in healthcare reminds me that the thing that makes it possible to turn Scrum teams loose in software and other parts of organizations for a couple weeks at a time and let them self-manage, have these daily meetings, and then every 2 weeks have a retrospective and a demonstration of what they did, and a retrospective and then the next planning. They operate with a lot of autonomy. And what makes that possible is that when the project starts, you get the stakeholders and the team that's going to do the work, and you get them together and you make a list of everything you want. And they call that the backlog. And the backlog is everything that anybody thinks would be valuable in the product they're building. And so there's this constant focus on what value is and what of all the things we can think of are most important. So you're always sorting the backlog, moving the highest priority stuff to the top, so that each sprint, each iteration, you take the most important stuff on. And so there's this ongoing, every day, every sprint, focus on what is the most important, most valuable work to be doing. And that's a conversation that I see goes straight to having that conversation with each family and each patient. What are we trying to accomplish here? Sometimes it's not always that we're trying to have them run marathons again. Some people are going to finish and are looking to finish it with some kind of quality that's different from getting your leg fixed and getting back to running or whatever. But each patient and family is going to have a different definition of value, like you say, and to be able to incorporate that into the ongoing conversations about what adds value on each floor and each unit, to have these things without the value conversation is just groundless.
We're almost out of time here. I'd like to take just a couple of minutes to announce a couple of upcoming calls that might be of interest. And then, Tricia, I think I'll ask you to open all the lines and let people have a chance to just say any last thing they'd like to say to Jill and Michael. I'd like to say to Jill and Michael, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun working on this. It's great fun to draw some others into the conversation today. I really appreciate all the time and thought that you've given to it. The next month, February 17, the Healthcare Plexus call will be Leadership Development in the Moment, Addressing Results and Relationships Simultaneously. Neil Baker, MD, is going to be talking about his journey to learn more about leadership development and his particular passion for addressing problem situations in a way that not only solves the problem but builds the relationships that are necessary to make that solution happen.